Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sari Ibrahim. Today, I'm interviewing David Putz, CEO of JKP Holdings. Dave decided he was tired of dealing with the headaches of being a landlord. He had been involved in property rehabs and rentals since 2005, and 5 years later, chasing people down for rent, dealing with maintenance issues, and coughing up cash to cover expenses when properties were vacant just didn't seem worth the return. Dave began his experience of looking for more passive income with distressed notes by working at a private equity fund. During his time at the fund, Dave analyzed large quantities of non-performing notes and consulted on which assets to purchase. In late 2012, he left the fund to start personally investing in notes nationwide and later formed his company, JKP Holdings. In 2016, Dave started a nationally known webinar where he uses his relationships with other experts in the same space to speak on topics related to note investing. Dave has created and utilized many forms of automation to expedite repeat tasks, to reduce errors, and increase time efficiency, which he passionately shares with his community and on his website. In 2021, JKP Investment Community was created. The community is a weekly mastermind of like-minded investors who get together to assist each other in obtaining their six-month and yearly investment goals. Together with his experience and strong relationships, Dave's extensive knowledge in the space of note investing has provided great success and profit to JKP Holdings and partners. Hey, Dave, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about note investing and what that is. Before we jump into that, I want to know more about you and your background. Do you mind sharing with us more about your background?
Absolutely. I became a landlord in 2005. I got into real estate and kind of figured things out. In 2010, I started learning about the short sale world, which is a lot of things going on back then. So what we started learning about the short sale world in 2010 was there's a ton of assets that are underwater. In 2010, I also then joined with a hedge fund that was doing well back then, a couple of $1 million in assets. And we started learning about this distressed notes world, which is 2010. Every asset was underwater, and we're buying what they call these notes world, right? So we weren't buying the brick and mortar, we're buying the paper behind it and becoming a lien lord, as we like to refer to. In 2012, I did leave that hedge fund to start buying notes, seeing the profit being made. And 2015, started getting more and more into it as I started doing webinars and whatnot. In 2019, I created a due diligence company that we allowed ourselves to automate all processes in due diligence to kind of figure things out, reducing errors, as well as increasing profitability. Since then, we've created webinars, we've created tools, resources. And what we do now is we're speaking at national conferences and running webinars. But our focus has primarily been that buying and selling residential mortgage notes. Mm-hmm.
So just so the audience knows, like, for example, if I come to you, Dave, and I say, hey, I'll sell you this property for, you know, $500,000, for example, at 8% interest over a 20-year period. And then you say, okay, now we have a promissory note. Now that note that I have, I can now sell that, keep earning income from it. That's what you do, right? Like, to make it a very
basic. Absolutely. And some people do an 80-20 loan. Most people are familiar with this piggyback 70-30, where maybe they hold the 30% loan and they sell the 70 and they cashed out completely. And now they got a 30% loan for the next 30 years cash flowing, mm-hmm, with no liability, which is the really key feature here, that we're no longer having to hold a brick and mortar asset and have the liability of it, right? We're not dealing with tenants. We're not dealing with toilets. We're literally just going to be getting a passive cash flow for the next 30 years.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. So, like, you know, like you said, like, if something happens to the property, it's not a property management issue. It's you're essentially the bank. Like, you can't call your bank right now when you're, you know, you have a water problem. Or
we would love to do it, but we can't.
Right. So you help people then get into this. Now, how is it, like, you know, I would say, what's more lucrative to get into, like to get into being an actual landlord or to be a lien lord?
So, I mean, obviously, I would say lien lord, but it depends on the nature of person, right? We're buying nationwide. We're not stuck in our little sector where you have thousands and tens of thousands of competitors bidding on the same assets, right? We're buying nationwide. We're basically based in Texas and Florida, mm-hmm, and everything else, because the fact that sometimes the market's not good in your backyard. Sometimes it is, So we're not stuck on that thing. So if you're looking to be a brick and mortar, and there are some values to it, such as appreciation, you don't get the appreciation being the bank, but Bank of America didn't have me become the biggest tower building in the city because they're landlord. They yeah. don't do that, right? They became because they're leveraging cash.
Right. And then how do you, so let's just say I start this today, like I become a note investor. How do you find these notes available to buy?
Awesome question. So there's a couple different ways. You can either A, get on social media and get interacting with people. You can also go in the world of seeing what other local areas have and jump at some RIAs. Find some owner finance people out there who are now maybe buying a note and then selling it seller finance. Those kind of things. The county papers can be doing stuff like that. There's hedge funds who are doing it, but also other note investors who may have bought an asset that was a non-performer, which means that the borrower stopped paying, and now they got performing because they got a modification or reinstatement or whatever, and now they're able to sell the asset. They're going to make a profit. You're going to make a cash flow. As long as nothing happens, you're going to make a cash flow until the maturity date. So there's a bunch of different ways to get into the note space, and the biggest factor I find is we have about 5,000 to 7,000 note investors nationwide. Tell me one state that has 5,000 to 1,000 real estate investors in their one state. It's tremendously less competitive yeah. than the real estate world. And we're buying at a cheaper price because we're buying it not off the MLS. We're not buying it at the county steps. We're actually the ones selling at the county steps. We're buying at such a discount that I think a lot of people would be jealous.
And how much does one typically need to get started, like on their first note?
There's a whole lot of features and notes that are very confusing at first, right? Yeah. We have our first lien, we have our second lien, yeah. we have our performing, we have our non-performing. And I kind of compare them to fix and flips and rental, right? Do you want to buy a rental property that has a tenant in there? Or maybe a tenant bad, but you can buy it at a discount
yeah.
and get a great opportunity to say, I can evict. Maybe a first-time landlord is scared of eviction, and they'll sell the property cheap because mm-hmm. they don't know how to do the eviction process. Well, you buy it at a cheap price, maybe a great aspect. So if you're looking to get first-time into it, the best key is to buy that performing rental property idea. Mm-hmm. So you buy performing paper. Now, depending on the balance of the loan at the current time, you can buy it. We bought it as low as $500, right? We bought it as high as a couple hundred thousand. So it uh-huh. ranges based on same thing with rental property, how much you need to get into it.
Yeah.
One thing you can't do is you can't leverage it. Meaning, I can't sit there and borrow money to buy a note unless yeah. I'm buying borrow money from a private equity person.
Okay. So what that means is, like, for example, when you buy a property, let's just say it's $500,000. Typically, you could put down $100,000 or whatever, $120,000, $130,000 to get the property. You finance the rest of it. In the note yes. world, if you wanted to buy a note for $500,000, typically you would need all that money. And then unless it's private equity leverage, and what that means is that there are private equity firms out there that all they do is just invest in notes, but not directly invest in notes. They loan money to investors like you, and then you would take that money and then leverage their money to buy more notes.
Absolutely. There are all different ways of yeah. doing this, right? Yeah. What another feature, the fact that, like you said, we're buying it, that $500,000 property, we may buy the note for $200,000
yeah.
or $250,000. You tell me where you're going to buy that property. If that was at the auction steps, you're probably paying $450 for it. If you're yeah. buying a retail, you're probably paying $550 for it. Mm-hmm. We're in the world where we're buying maybe $250, maybe $300, depending on where it's at. We're buying a significant discount. Sometimes it's $350. If it's in a really good state, a really good area, we may buy higher. But we're not going to hit the $450 number. We mm-hmm. just wouldn't do it. We're too much down the river that we're the ones going to be selling to those people eventually once we need to dispose of the asset. We may never.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So what could somebody typically expect? Like if you bought a note, how much could you typically expect to earn an interest income or to like overall like sell that note? Like what would be the typical return on that investment?
Absolutely. So what we typically work in is the word yield. What does yield really mean? It's the interest return. Just yeah. like your bank account, any bank loan, you have your interest per year. So we're targeting 12 to 15 right now. Right, we're getting some 16s and 18s depending on the status of loan, performing or non. We also, if it's a first or second, yep. so they're all kind of changes. But I would say 12 to 15 is kind of average. Some people are getting 10%, mm-hmm. which in this world right now, your bank account's getting 4.5, 5. If you're landlording, make sure you take all your expenses out. And what is your net return? Cap rates are really around 4 to 5.
Yeah,
we're looking at between minimum 10. We're looking at 12 to 15. We're buying at to get a good return.
Mm-hmm. And is that like, for example, what's a typical hold period? Like like 1 year, or how long are you typically holding on to the note?
So in the non-performing world, depends on what state it's in, right? Texas, we can get in and out in 90 days if it's foreclosing. 90 days, I can, just like eviction, it takes me 90 days to foreclose in Texas. Well, if I'm in New Jersey or if I'm in New York, I could
California.
Be 18 months. Yeah, or California, I could be waiting 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It depends on the state. So, but if performing, you may get a 12, 13% return for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Right? Constant cash flow. You can buy partials too, which is another nice way we talk about in our beginner series. Is a nice way to get into the space with a little bit less risk, but maybe you buy a partial for, maybe you have some Roth IRA money that you're self-directing. You have last year's money of $6,000 sitting there. Well, I'm going to go buy a partial for just 12 months. So I just need a 10% on that. So I can take $6,000 and I can go there and put $6,000 in, get 10% of money, and then I can do it again next year if I want. So you can revolve around a partial world of the note, which is partial payments, only 12 payments, maybe the 300 payments are left.
Yeah, yeah. So you talked about using a self-directed IRA. You could either do a regular IRA, traditional IRA, or Roth IRA. And like you said, like you can have the asset inside there, the note inside the IRA. And what happens then is it grows tax deferred. So like you can keep flipping your money over and over again within the IRA without having to pay taxes on it. You could also do the same thing with like cash value life insurance. You could take out a loan against a policy. Right. Use that to invest in notes and then use the income you get from the notes to add back into the policy and then keep doing so. Yeah. So I think I would definitely recommend that from a financial planning perspective. I'd recommend doing some sort of tax advantage because I think that if you were to compare note investing to real estate investing, one of the slight downsides to note investing is all the income is taxable income, right? Like ordinary income, you'd probably get a 1099 INT you'd have to file a 1099 INT at the end of every year. So that could be a little bit higher in taxes, which is kind of a good problem to have. You pay more taxes, but whereas in the real estate world, it could either be rental income or capital gains or, you know, it's a little bit better. But I'm not saying that no investing is bad. I'm just saying that the tax perspective could be a little bit different.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the liability on the note side is zero.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't get the appreciation. We're honest and forthcoming in the fact that we don't get our tax gains, right? We also don't get our appreciation. But guess what? Bank of America does neither one.
Yeah.
The reason they're profitable because they're borrowing money at real cheap, your money at 4% and loaning it out at 7%.
Yeah, yeah.
All day long, no liability. They don't care about the taxes on it because they're making 3% on no money put out, right? Yeah. So if you want to tax me on the fact that I'm making 3% on no money put out all day long, twice on Sunday, right?
Yeah,
that's where my mind is. I want to be a bank. Bank of America doesn't do anything like this stuff, like landlord. And they're strictly take money at 4 and loan it out 7 all day long and keep repeating it.
Right. And even in a high interest environment, this is also good too, because it looks like the returns are correlated. As the interest rates go up, so do your returns.
Yes. So returns in our world, they do increase as we move along here, right? If you get master size, it changes a little bit.
Yeah.
So you just have to be careful with that. But when you're in the world where we're buying loans like that, even if you're newer, you're not having to worry about that kind of stuff, right? If you're looking for a good return and you have some IRA money or you have a couple hundred grand or even if you only have 30. My first note, I bought two for a total of $5,500, right? Great situation, got my returns and bought more. I bought notes at $30,000 and sold them for $180,000 in a matter of 3 months. We've hit some really great home runs, right? We also had some losses too. I'm not all, you know, daisies on it.
Yeah, yeah.
What we look at the fact is, what am I doing and what's my liability? And the funny thing is, unlike a lot of landlords and tenants, the farthest I have to move is probably to the kitchen, right? Yeah. I don't go out and look at any of these properties by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I use my local experts, my REO agents. I use my other contacts and other investors nationwide to say, listen, I have a property in Dallas, Texas. I want that expert to tell me about that property. So all my work is computerized, which is amazing for some people. Some people love it, some people hate it. But for my world, my liability is down and my commute time is really easy.
Yeah, that's what makes it scalable. Like you could buy 100 notes while you're in your, you know, home office, but you can't do that in the real estate investing world, buy 100 properties, you know, actual properties. It would take you too much time to do so.
Yeah. And what we get is a tape, what they call, which is a list of addresses, notes that are available.
Yeah.
Right. What you don't realize is if you're an MLS, you're looking at the MLS list. We get similar things called tapes sent to us by different funds and different sellers. And we can evaluate that list in a matter of minutes and evaluate and say, I want this one. I'm going to bid that one. I'll bid this one, bid this one. I make offers, you know, 8 of them, 10 of them, 50 of them without leaving my chair.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dave, what's, just to be transparent, like what's like the worst thing that could happen if you invest in a note? Like worst case scenario?
We can get a situation where we think the property worth X and it's not, right? We open the front door and there's a whole lot of crap inside, water damage, there's no insurance on the property. So we can get ourselves some bad stuff because we can't see inside the property because mm-hmm. we're buying in debt. We're not buying a property. That borrower doesn't know we're actually buying their debt until they get the servicer, which is your property manager in the typical real estate world. We use servicers and notes. And if anyone's had a mortgage, they get a mortgage statement every month. That's from the servicer. That servicer manages our interaction with a borrower. So we're going to talk to the borrower. They talk to our servicer and we sit back and read emails and make a couple phone calls. So in our world, we get a tape of assets, we evaluate them, make a decision, and then we go from there. And then we deal with our servicer interacting with the borrower who may be behind and they default for all kinds of reasons, right? They got sick, death, injury, whatever it is. And then we open that front door. We're hoping it's okay. And most of the time, it's not bad, right?
Yeah.
And most of the time, the borrower is defaulted because they got sick or injured. And then they can run a short sale. Now, those who listen, who buy short sales or get into short sales, guess who approves short sales? We do.
Okay.
We don't want it. We do want it, right? We have control of everything, just like Bank of America.
Do you mind defining what is a short sale?
Sure. Short sale. Let me give you numbers. I think that's real estate people love numbers, right? So we have a property that is worth, say, $50,000. But the unpaid debt on the property is $100,000.
Okay.
Cool. So what do we do then, right? We can't sell the property because it's only worth 50. So the borrower says to the bank, hey, listen, the property is not worth 100. I want out. I'm going to list it for sale. Would you approve a short of the price of 100,000 and we have a price of 50,000? Would you accept it? The bank, what it does is they can either deny or approve it. And what they could do is write off the loss against their gains. Pretty cool stuff.
Okay, so they would just like, for, in this case, if they did say yeah, they would write off 50,000 and then just make it even. They would make the loan equal to like the market value at that time.
Okay. Absolutely. Gotcha. Right? It's a loss of investment. That's the same thing, right? Now, they might have bought that note for 50,000.
Yeah.
But the unpaid balance is 100. So literally, they're writing off money out of thin air. Because remember, when we buy a note, now that note may be worth 100. We may buy it for 50. That borrower is going to make payments on based on $100,000 note. We're always buying at a discount.
Right, right. And then some people are probably listening, like, would a bank really lose money? And the answer is, yeah, absolutely, because it's not just one loan, right? It's thousands of loans. So the vast majority of those loans are probably going to be performing. They are going to be paying. So the ones that do, it's the law of large numbers, you know? Over with the losses, with the gains, the bank still comes out ahead. The same way that insurance companies operate, they need a lot of customers. Yeah, yeah. A lot of policies, and overall, they end up coming out ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Banks are saying, listen, remember, most of the money the banks lend out, it's money they keep from your savings account. It didn't come from their bank account, right? So they're using your money and then taking a loss on it, but they really borrowed it, you know, borrowed your money at 4, whatever banks are at now, and they're lending at you at 7. If you default, there's still a situation where they're borrowed at 7. You paid most of the money. And where most of the interest is up front.
Yeah.
So it changes everything. In most loans, after 12 and a half years, you've now flipped the switch on principal interest. And we've received all the interest and all the principal payments. It's great. And again, we bought it at a discount. That's the key for notes.
And then even with the note, is it also like, is it similar to how a mortgage is? Like it's amortized, like the principal interest is broken out monthly?
Exactly. So a mortgage is an instrument, security instrument, right?
Yeah.
We should start beginning with this, right? A note is the IOU.
Yeah.
Mortgage is the security instrument, the lien on the property.
Right.
So when you go get a mortgage for your house, they do a mortgage and a note.
Yeah.
We're buying both.
Okay.
Right. So when we buy both, the mortgage and a note, we control, the note tells us all the numbers, all the math numbers. When the mortgage tells the security instruments that if you default, we're going to be able to take that property back.
Okay.
So what we do is we're really buying a mortgage. We're buying a mortgage. And we're just like anything else, that mortgage switched from Bank of America to whoever buys it. And there's a chain called Simon Mortgage. You look in your county records, you'll see assignments. If your loan never got sold, it was a Simon Mortgage. and a lawn to the new one.
Right. Like when I closed on my property a couple of years ago, the mortgage was sold like a month later. It was sold from one bank to another
bank. Guess what? Maybe we bought it. Who knows?
That's awesome. So just to be clear, Dave, how do you help people? Can you give us some examples of how you help people?
So for the investor side of things or on the borrower side of things, we help both people, right? On the borrower side, we make it get their situations a lot better because let's say a borrower gets in a situation where they're behind, but we buy a discount and we do a modification to drop their payment. Why does it help us? We get a performing asset kicking in and we're still making a profit. So the borrower is going, oh my God, you knocked my payment down $200. Thank you so much. I now can afford it. I can stay here. I can raise my kids. On the flip side, for investors who are curious, we help them by giving them the tools to understand it. Between our education program, we have beginners, we have an advanced level, we have resources of attorneys, servicers, as well as other investors. We have our social media platform. We have our due diligence portal, which allows any real estate investor to go out there and grab over 60 data points on any property nationwide in a matter of seconds. You can run 100 assets in there and it'll take you 3 to 9 seconds per property. We also have a large webinar group that we actually run every other week for new investors to teach them new things that we've been running for years now. We have all different facets that we kind of help. And why do we help? Because we know the fact that in line, it will work out. And the networking we gain from all this is tremendous. And the reason why we do it.
Awesome. Okay. And how can listeners connect with you and learn more about you?
Absolutely. So if you go to jkpholdings.com, our website, you can definitely connect there. If you go on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and whatever, you can go to JKP Holdings and you'll find us there. JKP Holdings has note investors. And if you're looking to sell a note, you have one for sale, you can go there and give us all the information, our resources, our training programs, and everything you want to see is already there for you to go into and check out.
Awesome, Dave. Well, it was a pleasure having you on our podcast. I'm looking forward to having you back on.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N, assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.